Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, got a fantastic show for you this week, live from Mobile, Alabama. That's right, Mobile, Alabama. We are going to talk to a very special guest about how an all-star game is pulled off in a pandemic. Just a fascinating conversation on how they're making it work down here in the Deep South. We've got your takeaways. We've got fantasy and DFS info from Michael Fabiano. And as always, we get to all of your questions in the six-pack. Let's go. All right, welcome in. The championship games are in the books. The 2020 season has one game left. 255 games have been played, 30 teams down, two left standing. The Chiefs and the Buccaneers will play for all the marbles at Raymond James Stadium, the Buccaneers' home stadium, on February 7th. After all that we've been through to get here, it's hard to believe that we're actually here, but we are at the finish line. It's the Albert Breer Show. We got a ton of stuff for you coming this week on where I'm at right now. I'm at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. So we're going to talk some draft here, and we're going to talk about staging an all-star game in a pandemic, which seems like it'd be like the most difficult thing to do, flying people in from all over the country, trying to make it work logistically, trying to keep everybody safe. So we got a great guest in to talk about pulling that off. We got Fabs with fantasy and DFS stuff. And we have all of your questions in the six-pack. We're going to start with the takeaways. And we've got one on each of the teams that played last weekend. And we got to start with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and with Tom Brady. And I know he threw three picks in the second half. But I think it was as good an example of how that team has become Tom Brady's team as maybe I've seen all year. How clutch they were, the game management stuff. I thought they were nails when it counted. And yeah, he threw the three picks. He didn't play very well in the second half. But you know what? Other parts of his team were there to pick him up. And there are younger players in that team, guys like Murphy Bunting, guys like Devin White, guys like Carlton Davis, that I think are playing with a certain swagger and confidence because they have Brady on their side, because they expect good things to happen now. And again, you see the way that they're handling the most critical situations. And I don't think it's a coincidence that teams that Brady's been on have performed so well in these situations over the years. And so you see it at the end of the first half with Brady converting the fourth and four. Most teams wouldn't go for that. They go for it. They pick it up. They set that. They set up outside the Packers' 40-yard line, and they take a shot. And a lot of teams wouldn't take a shot in that situation. And you're doing these things because Brady's your quarterback. And then in the second half, towards the end of the game, like you see the defense standing up and making the stop when they needed to. Again, young players playing with confidence. Young players learning what it takes to win. That's a very talented roster. Bruce Arians deserves credit. Jason Light deserves credit. There's a lot of young players that have come of age on that roster, and even some veteran guys that deserve credit. You know, some of the older guys, Levante David, Mike Evans, some of the younger guys, Chris Godwin, like I said, Devin White, guys who came there and like made their bones elsewhere, like Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh and Shaq Barrett. Like, there's a ton of credit to go around. But it's, you know, I texted with Jason White when he was on the plane going back, and he put it really simple. Just said, we expect to win now. And that's the effect Brady's had. And I think you can see it in the way that they're playing in critical spots. The Tom Brady effect in Tampa is real. I saw it when I was there in camp in August. You could tell it was Tom Brady's operation. And I'm not saying I saw this coming, but I do think a major part of them being where they are is because of who their quarterback is and because of how that's put them in a position to to take some of their guys to the next level, where they go from really good players to winners. Takeaway number two, do I think the Green Bay Packers are going to trade Aaron Rodgers? No. Do I think Aaron Rodgers 100% absolutely, positively, without a doubt, knew what he was doing when he said what he said on the post-game Zoom on Sunday? Yes. I think what Aaron Rodgers is doing here, he's dipping his toe in the water. He's very self-aware. He's dipping his toe in the water. He's trying to figure out exactly what buttons to push. And I think he's got enough experience to sort of know where he can go with this. And I think as much as anything else, it's a message to the front office. Be aggressive. Get me some help. Put me in a position to compete. Let's work with a two-year window. And, you know, he's been part of an organization for a long time that's always had this, like, really, I would say, really solid long-range planning. And they haven't always acted with the most urgency. Now, that's changed a little bit with Brian Gutekunst. He went out and he signed Preston Smith. He signed Adrian Amos. And he signed Za'Darius Smith during the 2019 offseason. I think, you know, what you see from Rodgers right now is sort of a looking around at the landscape and seeing how aggressive the Chiefs were with Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback, and seeing how aggressive the Bucs were, and how the Bucs, like at every turn, the team that beat them on Sunday, were picking somebody else up, whether it was Leonard Fournette or Shady McCoy or Rob Gronkowski. It was not like those were seismic moves, but those were moves of aggression. Those were moves of, we are going to do whatever it takes to win right now, this year, period. We are going to do what it takes to put the best team around our quarterback. We are going to do whatever it takes to get the most out of our older quarterback. And I think that's what Aaron Rodgers is asking for. Now, he's not blameless, okay? Like, I thought it was poor form to some degree that, he said, like, it's not my decision on the Matt LaFleur decision on fourth down. Because on third down, I think you can question his decision-making. I think he could have gotten in the end zone on that play, or at the very least made it a more manageable fourth down to try and go for. So, I just think it's a complicated – the Packers-Rodgers relationship has been complicated for a while. I think, you know, the coaching change cleaned it up a little bit. But there's still that piece there, and I think that Rodgers is very much exerting leverage right now. Takeaway number three, I think we saw something significant from Patrick Mahomes on Sunday. And, well, part of it's like where quarterbacks have to go once they get to a certain age. Once you get past your rookie contract as a young quarterback, the dynamic changes. I mean, we've seen it with Jared Goff. Carson Wentz now passed his rookie contract. What has that meant for the Eagles? We've seen where sometimes these young quarterbacks can really perform when the team has the advantage of all of that extra cap space to build around them. And then when they get paid, the math changes, and we've talked about this on the show before. Now it becomes more on the quarterback to fill some of the holes that are created by the fact that you got a little less room to work with. If you make mistakes in the draft, they're magnified a little bit because you can't just go and sign player X, Y, or Z to fill a hole. So I think what we saw from Mahomes on Sunday was proof that we knew it already, but it's proof that he can be that guy too. Here's what I mean. He had Tyreek Hill. He had Travis Kelce. But you know what? No Sammy Watkins. No Mitch Schwartz. For a part of the game, no Eric Fisher. And he had to make up for them losing guys. And he's throwing to Pringle. And he's throwing to Robinson. And, you know, he's trying to get a little bit more out of Mecole Hardman. And I think it just sort of showed that he's not going to crumble to his situation. Like, if his situation isn't quite the same, because the Chiefs have to build differently in 2 or 3 years, he's going to be able to make up the difference. And I think we had indications. We knew that was sort of going to be the case. But the fact that we actually saw it on the field on Sunday, to me at least, that's significant. Takeaway number four. I know everybody always says this, right? Like, they'll be back. This won't be their last shot. I really do feel that way about the Buffalo Bills, though. If you look at their roster, their cornerstones are all young. Some of these guys don't even have second contracts yet. Obviously, the dynamic's going to change a little bit when those guys get second contracts. But if you look at their best players, Josh Allen, Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, Stephon Diggs, Deion Dawkins, Ed Oliver, Tremaine Edmonds, Matt Milano, Tre'Davious White, most of their best players are in their mid-20s and still ascending, or they're younger than that. And their cap is in healthy shape. They've got a full complement of draft picks now coming out of the Diggs trade. I just look at it like that Bills team is in position to get better next year, not worse. Now, dealing with expectations, dealing with newfound stardom for certain guys, like there are challenges associated with that. But I think what Sean McDermott's built from a cultural standpoint is pretty solid there. I think the types of guys they brought into their program has been calculated. So when success does come, they're ready for it. And so I really like where the Bills are coming out of this. It was not their day on Sunday. They did not play very well. Josh Allen shoulders blame for that. His first time on this stage, he didn't play great. Obviously, the defense really struggled to deal with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And I think there's some game plan stuff that they have to look at there. Like, how do those guys wind up with 26 targets? But at the end of the day, I still think the best days for this Buffalo Bills group, that group of players, that coaching staff, I still think the best days are ahead. And they may lose Leslie Frazier, and that would be a blow. But the fact that they're bringing back a lot of guys, the front office made it out of the GM hiring cycle intact. Joe Shane, Dan Morgan, Brian Gain, those guys are still there. The fact that Brian Daboll is going to be in Buffalo next year, these are all pluses, and these are all why I think the Bills could be back in the same spot as soon as next year. Finally, takeaway number 5. You've heard a lot about quarterback movement, right? Yeah, I mean, Stafford's on the move. We all saw what Schefter tweeted about 18 quarterbacks potentially moving. Well, why is this? Why is it that, like, teams that have quarterbacks on contracts, guys like the teams like the Rams and the Raiders and the Niners would explore this? Why is this? I think there's a Mahomes effect happening in the NFL. Here's what I mean. I think that the bar has risen for what teams really feel like they need at the quarterback. Not what they want, because everybody wants a Mahomes. What they feel like they need. And I think there was a time, maybe let's go back 10 years, when you could feel fairly comfortable that if you had a quarterback that was the 11th or the 12th or the 13th or the 14th best quarterback in the league, you could win a Super Bowl with that guy. And I mean, even more recently than that, you see Jared Goff getting to a Super Bowl. Joe Flacco, Eli Manning, were those guys ever truly top 5 quarterbacks? Probably not. Like, they got hot at the right time, but probably not. Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl in his second year. Now, he's wound up being fantastic, but was he top 5 at that point? No. I think you just look across the league and you can see so many examples of teams that won with, like, really good but not great quarterbacks. And I think now a lot of these teams are looking up and seeing the mountain they're going to have to scale to get to a championship, and that's Mount Mahomes. And we even saw an example of it last year where the Niners went into that game with Jimmy Garoppolo and a very, very, very a solid team, a fairly healthy team, like a team that had it all going, that could beat you different ways, that had the formula for winning a Super Bowl, right? Like the old formula, which is, who can win the most amount of ways? When teams take something away from you, do you have a counterpunch? Like, that was the Niners. And what happened? Well, for 3.5 quarters, the Niners put it on the Chiefs. And then, in about 8 minutes of game action, Patrick Mahomes made none of it matter. And so, I think teams look at that and they're like, oh, and he was only in his third year when he did that. And oh, look what he just did to Buffalo. And I think teams are looking at it and saying, like, that's who we have to beat now to get to a championship. And it makes them question what they have at the position. It makes them question if what they have at the position makes them the 45-1 NBA team, where you can fool yourself into thinking you're close, but really you're not beating that guy with your quarterback. And so I think that there's a lot of self-reflection now going on, and it's not just Mahomes. It's primarily Mahomes, but it's like Josh Allen, and you watch him, you're like, oh, his ceiling really, really high. Like, you see a guy who, like, could be incredibly special and a top 5 quarterback if he can ever put it all together, and he's getting closer. And then you look at Justin Herbert in LA. It's like, all right, like, that is a guy who looks like he can compete with Mahomes. And then you got Trevor Lawrence coming in. So my point is, like, that if you don't have a guy with that sort of ceiling, I think, like, seeing what Mahomes is doing now sort of makes you question for the foreseeable future, for the next 10 years, how far you can go with the guy that you have in place. And so I think at the very least, you've got lots of teams asking that question of themselves, and that will be asking that question of themselves over the next 6 or 7 weeks leading into the beginning of the league year, the official start of free agency, and when trades can be made official there in the middle of March. All right, we will get to our special guest right after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, we're going to welcome back in a guy that I've had on a couple times that we really enjoy having on in normal conditions, but we really wanted to have on in these conditions. I am actually coming to you live from Mobile, Alabama, as I said earlier in the show. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year, coming down here every year for the Senior Bowl, but it's a very, very different environment based on just everything that's happening in our country now. And so we're going to welcome in the executive director of the Senior Bowl, and he's been doing this for a few years now. But I would say your job's probably been a little different this year. He's Jim Nagy. Welcome in, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Albert. It's cool to hear you say live from Mobile. I love it. You're here. It's happening, which is great. Yeah, definitely took on some job titles this year, like plexiglass salesman, interviewer. There's just been so many. This job always has a lot of hats. And my predecessor, Phil Savage, kind of warned me about all the hats you wear. But I didn't know, like, plexiglass guy and all this other stuff that goes along with COVID would actually be part of it.
So, all right, let's rewind then. Obviously you get out from underneath the draft, and I think your process probably starts like after the game, but really after the draft, you have an idea of what it's going to look like. And, when was the first time that you, like, when did you guys first like sit down and really like maybe have that meeting where you said, we need to start really looking at different solutions?
Really, really, Albert, when the whole COVID hit and like the heaviness of it and the, just the reality sank in, like, well, this could be a long-term deal. We might not get out of this for a while. So we were into our process in terms of the evaluation part pretty good, but it got real, real quick, honestly, like maybe I was just naive or overly optimistic. But we started these contingency plans in place and what we'll do, but I really didn't think we'd still be here, for this year's game. I knew we had to have some plans in place, but I didn't think we'd get to January and be implementing all of them, not even some of them, but all of them. So, it started back in March or April.
Okay. So it was March or April of last year. And so it's just sort of like at that point, I guess more if it's still like this, then this is what we're going to do. Is it sort of like talking in hypotheticals at that point?
Yeah, it's a little bit like, okay, worst case scenario, we're still in the mode that we're in right now. And we're probably a little out of that, but it's still close enough. Then you started talking to people. And again, I think everyone in every walk of life has talked about having to be fluid this year and being being able to, kind of be on your toes and be reactive. And I don't like being reactive. I like having plans in place. And but with this, you had to be. You start out in the spring and you go through the summer, and then you get to the fall when teams are actually playing. And again, we don't have a football team down here. We have the Senior Bowl that we play once a week or one week a year. So like I had to call guys at the college level and the pro level and just see what they were going through and what their players were going through and what's working and what are you guys doing here. So it was just, there were so many exploratory phone calls that took place until we finally got to a place where, okay, this is what they're doing and what are we going to have to do? So then it kind of spun into conversations with hospital systems and infectious disease people, till we finally got to a place where, yes, we can do this and we can do it safely. We weren't just going to put on the Senior Bowl just to put it on. And that was, we had to know we could do it safely. And once we got to that point and we were confident in it, then it was from that point on, it was full speed ahead.
Was there a coach or a program that was particularly helpful, or maybe a couple that you can remember talking to that kind of gave you guys good advice early on?
You know, so many of them. You know, a lot of GMs were really deep into it. A lot of coaches at the college level. I mean, from head coach all the way to like directors of player personnel at the college level, that what they're dealing with. Really, South Alabama here locally was great because I could get into the weeds with them. It's one thing to be on a call. You don't want to keep someone on the phone for 3 hours and go through their whole plan. And you know, a lot of those calls were, what are the pitfalls? You know, when are you guys? You know, what are the landmines that you guys are having to step around? But South Alabama and their athletic director Joel Erdman was great. Just kind of going through everything they did to put in place from an institutional standpoint, university-wide standpoint, because we were going to be playing their game out there. So they've been great in this whole transition out to the stadium. That was one part of it. That's one newness of this year's event. But they're on the COVID front, they were great as well.
Was there like a couple pieces of advice that were really important early on as far as pulling it off? Like something people told you that maybe was common from person to person where it was like, all right, like that's pretty consistent. I'm hearing that from everybody. So we need to make sure we, you know, take care of this.
Yeah, it's just like the big congregations of people. So I think someone said it best, like meet, eat, and greet or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the COVID plan, it was all levels. So these guys showed up a day early. They showed up on Saturday. It's usually a Sunday. And they showed up here. And the way we had it set up, they came into a huge ballroom. They got tested immediately. The very first thing they did was fill out paperwork, sit in a chair, and get swabbed. And then we had, you know, touchless points where they picked up a bag for this and a bag for that. And then they got right through. We got them up to their room and quarantined them. So there was that point. It's, you know, we're singling them up in rooms this year where they've always had roommates. I think it's great to bring guys in from around the country and give them roommates. A lot of those guys leave and become good friends moving on to the NFL. But they're singled up this year. And then even meals, like one of the big values for the teams. And me personally, I love connecting with all our guys in the game. So like sitting around at lunch and dinner and really just, you know, getting to know these guys as people, that went away this year. You know, where it's all grab and go meals. So they're all going through a line. People are serving them up and they're going up and eating in their room. So, you know, I guess the meet, eat, and greet thing kind of struck me. It was simple, but I realized then that like we can't be in big congregations.
Did you guys set rules for the Dolphins and Panthers? Obviously those guys, those staffs are very accustomed to this, having gone through, you know, a full season of these sorts of conditions already. But like, how did you guys work with like the Dolphins and Panthers as far as just setting the rules, like what they could do as far as meetings, what they could do as far as, you know, spacing and all that different stuff?
Yeah. I mean, that talking about being fluid, it's been fluid up until the last couple of weeks when those, and they've been great, honestly. Like it couldn't have been better from Coach Flo and Matt Rhule all the way through their staff. I mean, they've been great. So we've even adjusted in these last couple of weeks. They've made some recommendations. Hey, you know, you might want to think about this. Like, I really think this would work if we did it this way. You know, we were very open to the meeting format. We made sure everything was distanced and measured out. We put tape on the floor, chairs in specific places. Where every room would be distanced. But we also knew that, you know, there would be some coaches maybe uncomfortable coming into Mobile. Like they're maybe comfortable in Miami or Charlotte doing it their way and being around their guys, but maybe coming here they wouldn't be. So like one of the things of singling guys up in room, we were capable of doing Zoom meetings. You know, if one of the coaches chose to do that for his position group, we could have done that. And they didn't. They're all over at the convention center and they're all meeting in their groups. But yeah, they've been great. And again, we've kind of had to stay fluid up until the guys arrive.
Like how much, well, let's start with the money part of it. Cause I know that like, you know, like a lot of stuff sounds good on paper and then somebody's got to start writing checks. Right. Like, so, you know, I think you gave me the number. It was like 20 grand in plexiglass, right?
It's 12. You're 12, close. 12, 12, 12, grand, 12 grand in plexiglass.
Right. Right. So like, give me an idea of like what you guys needed to do to make it work financially, like how much this sort of changed the dynamic, the financial model that you guys have been using for a lot of years.
Yeah, I got to give our local sponsors a lot of credit. You know, they've really stepped up. We've worked hard to kind of create events, you know, fan-based events to get fans down here, create more of a, you know, a fan experience and bring more people around from the country. And those events like the Mardi Gras parade last year, you know, the concerts, the summit, those are things that all our local sponsors were on, and they've really stepped up. We've stripped all those events away to make this a safe event, and they've stayed at the same levels that Ben at, which has been absolutely huge. And then to get buy-in from the NFL, there was no way to do this without getting buy-in from the NFL. So we created some packages this year. We moved to the new stadium at Hancock Whitney. They've got suites. So we packaged suites, we packaged extra interview time, priority seating at weigh-ins, like all sorts of things to create value for the NFL teams, because we wouldn't have been able to do it. You're talking a lot of money per test. And so 136 players tested every day, NFL guys tested every day. It adds up quick. So, hats off to our sponsors. They were huge, and huge thanks to the NFL teams. Those 32 clubs really helped us pull this off.
Is there any way you can quantify the financial difference for me? Like how much it cost, like whether you can give me hard numbers or if it's double or triple what it would normally cost?
I think our treasurer would probably get me in a headlock if I did that. Needless to say, it's significantly more than a normal Senior Bowl year. And again, we'll see where the financials end up. But again, we wanted to make this happen. I've got friends in the NFL, talking to those guys every day, what a challenge it was to pull off the week, the guys at the college level, seeing what these players went through. I mean, unless you're intimately involved in football, I don't think people quite understand how hard this year was. I know you talk to these guys and you get it too, but this was a really challenging year. So we really wanted to make this happen for these kids, with these teams. And so we're going to do everything possible.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that too, because you are a scout at heart, and I'm sure you look up in those stands and you sort of still view yourself as one of them. Right. And you spent a lot of years in the NFL. So, you know, obviously, you know, like this is for you, I think something you probably take to heart, this whole the importance of the process and importance of what these guys are trying to get here. So how big a motivator was that for you to try to get this game played you knew there were a lot of your friends where it was going to mean a lot for them, for their ability to do their jobs. And you knew that if you were maybe in their shoes, that you would really want it to happen. What sort of motivator was that for you personally?
It was a big motivator. It was, a lot of the guys that are making these decisions right now in the GM chair, director chair, guys that I came up with in the profession, we started together. These guys are my contemporaries. They're my friends. And there's so much money involved in this. It's huge business now. I mean, you draft a guy top of the first round, it's like a $20-30 million decision. And I don't know how you do that without seeing players and being across from players. I really don't know how you do that. So it was that. It was to make it happen for them. And then it was for these players as well. Like, these guys worked their whole lives for this. And then to get to their senior years and all this craziness going on and the uncertainty of it all, I wanted the Senior Bowl at least to be one piece of this process where the players would benefit and the NFL teams would benefit. Those both were huge motivators.
And I'm sure talking to those guys too, you got an idea of what was important to them, right? That if there were things that you were going to have to take away from the event, don't touch A, B, and C. What do you think it was important for? You're just discussing guys, and I'm sure you bounced a million of these things off of, guys you know in the business. What was important to them? What do you think that they wanted to walk away from this week with?
I think the biggest, what was important, first and foremost, the players. I think what's lost on a lot of people was the fact that these decision makers weren't seeing players this fall. There were a lot of scouts out at college games this year. I ran into a bunch of them down here in the Southeast. But they're not – first of all, they weren't allowed on the field. So you're up in the stands trying to see them with binoculars, and that's not the same thing as being up close and really getting up on a guy. You know that. In games. But the guys that are making the decisions in April, they weren't at games. They travel with their teams in the fall. So you can't go to a college game on a Saturday and then, you know, re-enter the bubble on, with your team on Sunday and go to the game. So the guy, the one GM I spoke to that did go to college games, he had to quarantine till, you know, good in well into the next week. And not a lot of guys were willing to do that. So this week, for the vast majority of these guys, 99% of these guys, this will be the first time they're laying their eyeballs on players. So there was that part of it. And then the other thing that was unique that we really wanted to make happen was face-to-face interviews. And we kind of joked about the expense of the plexiglass earlier, but that's important. You know, we're all, you know, we're doing a Zoom right now, and I think we're all kind of gotten used to the Zoom world. But to me, you got to read body language. You know, these are huge jobs these guys have, you know, so you read body language, you read posture and, you know, voice inflection and facial expression. Those are little things that you pick up on that can give you conviction. I mean, the whole draft process for these guys is building conviction on a player. And to me, getting in front of them is absolutely critical. These are essential jobs for these guys, critical jobs. And so to get them in front of these players so they can see them up close and then talk to them and kind of, you know, make that personal connection, those were really the two biggest goals.
So, like, to those who don't know, because I do think it's an interesting thing that, like, maybe the average fan wouldn't understand, like, why is it so important for a scout to actually put his eyes and body type a guy? Like, and if you can think of any interesting examples from your career that would sort of apply to it, that'd be great too.
I mean, body type is a big part of it. I really do think it's underrated. One, you know, it shows growth potential for one. Like Jordan Smith is a defensive end in our game this year from UAB. And you watch him on tape and he's this big 6'6", long body guy. But you just wonder, like, how much bigger can he get? And then when you see him, you realize this guy can get a lot bigger and you can't really. So you're looking at bone structure. You're looking at, you know, frame and shoulder width and hands. And I mean, it's just, it plays a critical part. And then there's like little red flags in terms of that you don't see on tape always, like being knock-kneed or, you know, they're playing to, you know, playing to balance and coordination. There's all sorts of things, but it really does play a big part. And when, you know, I've talked to our young guys on staff here that we've had here the last couple of years, their thing is, okay, you go to games, what do you look for? When you say body type, like, what does that mean? You can really just boil it down and does he look like an NFL guy or he doesn't? And that gets easier the longer you do it. But you can just like, you can go onto a college football field and know which guys are even going to get into a camp and which guys aren't, you know, for the most part, there's always outliers. But some guys just look like NFL players and some guys don't. So it's a huge part of it.
Okay. So I'd assume there are some things that maybe through the process of this that maybe you'll like keep, right? Like that you won't stop doing. And I'll give you a story. So I'm sitting in the lobby a little earlier and, you know, a guy who's high up in one of these organizations, you know, I'm talking to him about the way the week's going. And he says to me, he's like, you know what? Like the interviews, he's like, it was actually great. He was like, it was orderly. We didn't have to send like a younger, I guess what you'd normally do is maybe send younger scouts over there to try to save seats for people early or whatever. Yeah. And he was like, I really liked that it was assigned seats and like there was no, you know, there was no like chaos beforehand.
That was at weigh-ins.
At weigh-ins. Right. So like you said, you really liked that. Right. Like, so like, are there certain things that you think going through this that you're going to keep?
Absolutely. Yeah. The weigh-in part really was smooth this year. That is usually those poor guys, those poor scouting assistants, you know, even at the combine, same deal. I mean, some teams will have those guys go over there at 3 a.m. and like sleep out in front of the weigh-in area. It's ridiculous. But another part that we'd really like to, you know, think about continuing on in future years is the interview format. You know, I went over there last night, was the first night of formal interviews, and just had that immediate feedback from these guys. Like it was really working. And sometimes the knee jerk reaction, the reaction is the best one. But those guys really liked how it was set up. You know, in a normal year down here, it's always been kind of chaos, you know, grabbing players. It's good for the players because it's really laid back. It's way more laid back than the combine. But teams are fighting over guys and they're pulling guys off campus to other hotels and keeping them there for an hour or 2 hours. And it creates a lot of conflict between the you know, different clubs. So this really structured format we're having at night right now, we're going to have to think about that because so far it looks like it's working great.
Okay, so have there been any like funny moments where you like, I don't know, over the last 3 days stopped yourself or like, wow, I can't believe we pulled this off? Like, is there anything that you've kind of experienced that kind of jumps out at you as like kind of, you know, the sort of moment that you're going to remember 10 years from now?
I'll say that the first night we had 136 players in the game. We had a player miss a flight. So he got in much later than everyone else. And I got a text late Saturday night that we were 135 for 135 negative tests. So I went to bed that night thinking we did it. We got them here. They're all safe. Wake up Sunday morning and get a call that the guy that got in late popped a positive. And I'm like, oh no, we almost did it. And so we sent the testing. People went back up. They re-swabbed him, did another test, and had to wait hours and hours. I mean, all these other guys were getting registered. They were through the process already, and we finally get it back, and he's negative. So we had to send someone over, get him out of his room, get him back over to the Renaissance Hotel, and to like see the guy and the smile on his face. And he's a small school guy. I'll leave it at that. Like he really, really needs this week. And it was just like, it was such a great moment. I was so happy for him. I was crushed when I first heard the news. So it's like, he thought it was indicative. It was kind of encapsulates the COVID year in football. This guy got to the Senior Bowl as a small school player. He gets it ripped away from him as soon as he gets here, and then he gets it back. So I'll never forget the look on his face when he came to the hotel to show up that day.
That's crazy. So he was like just like sequestered in his room waiting to see if like it was a true positive or if it was a false positive?
Yes. Yeah, he was up there and he was dying. I was getting texts from his agent like literally a couple times an hour. And the agent was on pins and needles about it. So and he had a great practice today. I went up to him afterwards and I was like, man, I'm so glad that test came back negative for you. So it's I'll never forget that. Hopefully there'll never be another year like this.
Okay, a couple last things. Like, and I do want to give you the chance to do this because you have as good an idea of this at this point as anybody, I'd say, because your job is to look at the entire class. What would you tell people about the 2000, independent of the pandemic, what would you tell people about the 2021 draft class and its strengths and maybe some of its weaknesses?
Well, I think it's a very strong draft. I really do. And I think there's depth at really every position. There's not a real weak group except probably the interior defensive line. That's a group that there's going to be a cliff there. So I would pretty quickly too. So I would expect if you need interior D-line help, some of those guys might be pulled up because of the lack of depth in that group. But you look across the board, the running back group is very strong. Receiver was great last year, but it could be as good or better this year. The O-line group is off the charts. I'll just use our Senior Bowl group, for instance. 2 years ago, my first year at the game, we had five offensive linemen go in the first round. 9 of the 10 guys on the North team that year went in the first 3 rounds. And I really feel like this year's group is close, really, really close to that, if not a little better. Yeah, and I'd say the last group, Albert, is the edge rush group. It's a really strong class. There's depth in it. I think you can get into the third, fourth round and find guys that can get on the field next year and help you in downs, as situational guys as rookies. So, really like this draft, and we've got a great head start on next year where there's so many guys that opted back in this year to play in 2021. And we lost 7 or 8 guys that were committed to our game that coaches talked to coming back in, including a couple of top 50 players. So, this year's deep and next year as well. I mean, this is going to be like 3 back-to-back-to-back really strong drafts.
Okay. So, like just to wrap up, like in a couple last things to wrap up, first I want to like give you a chance to kind of tell me who deserves credit for pulling this off and maybe some people on your staff, people with the city. I know this is like way more than a one man effort. So like, some of the primary people that you think deserve credit for being able to make this happen, which I don't think there's been another all-star game across North America, at least that I know of, that's happened since the pandemic really you know, since things started getting shut down as a result of the pandemic back in March.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the PGA Tour, when those guys fly on private jets, I don't think there's been an event where people have been flying in from all over the country. But I'm glad you asked me that, Albert, because I give all the credit to our staff. I don't think what a lot of people might not realize, this is really a pretty small operation here in Mobile. We've got myself and four full-time staff members, and Dave Rogers and Elizabeth Dupree and Sonia Wakefield and Lauren Fleming, who are here every day. And then our three scouting assistants, Matt Kelly, Jeb Boudreau, and Tanner Chastain. That's been the core group. And they're the ones that have made it happen. I mean, we've had this vision for it, but it's got to be pulled together. So it's really been fun watching the team come together and kind of grasp the challenge of it. And again, we're going day by day right now. We got to get to Saturday and get to game day. But I'm proud of this group. I mean, this is a huge, challenging year, and they've had to buy in to kind of what we wanted it to be and what they've had to do and take on new roles and new challenges. And I can't say enough. I mean, it's been a really motivating year for me just to see all the sacrifice that everyone's making, and they continue to make through this week.
Yeah. So Albert, you will know this intimately. The whole media part of it in a normal year is it's different, because in a normal year we have media day and you have practice field open. So Dave Rogers can unleash the hounds on the players, and you guys can go get your work done. But now with all those things taken away, the poor guy's email box is like flooded. He's swimming in emails or, requests, and it's difficult. He's doing the best he can. So no, it's just like, it's such a great team effort. Again, from our board to our committee, to our full-time staff, to support staff during the week. It's been so fun and so rewarding watching everyone come together as a team.
So give people something to look forward to on Saturday. Like, if they tune into NFL Network and check out the game, give them something to look forward to. Like, what would you be looking most forward to watching?
Yeah, I mean, I would say first and foremost, you look at Mac Jones, and let's see what Mac can do. Just in my 2 years at the game, you got Daniel Jones, who started off as, probably a mid to late first round pick in the process, came to the Senior Bowl, was MVP, had a great game, went sixth overall. Last year, Justin Herbert was probably somewhere in that 10 to 15 range, had a great week, Senior Bowl MVP, went sixth. In hindsight, he probably should have went one, two, or three. I mean, he's incredible. So I think to see where Matt can go with this thing. And then there's so many potential first-round guys, whether it's Kadarius Toney from Florida, the wide receiver, Levi Onwuzurike, the defensive tackle from Washington, across the board, Aaron Robinson, the corner from UCF, Alex Leatherwood from Alabama, the tackle. There's a bunch. I mean, we went through the board the other day, and there was like 12, 15 guys we thought could play their way into the first round, which is really good, considering how like deep the draft is now in juniors. So there's going to be guys like Justin Herbert and Gibson, the great running back from the Washington football team, Chase Claypool, Jeremy Chinn, the great safety from the Panthers this year. I mean, all those guys were in the game last year. So if you're a real NFL fan, a draft fan, you're going to see people on Saturday that are going to be on the field for you next year as a rookie impacting your team.
Okay. And like, I'll just give you this one last chance to kind of show pride for what you guys have accomplished here. Quickly, what are you most proud of, like, that you guys are here? And I know the week's not over, and I know things could still happen, but what are you most proud of?
You're right. The week isn't over. We'd get there. I'm just proud of the spirit that our team has shown. I'm proud of, I'm thankful for the help that we've received from the NFL and the, friends from the 32 teams, the agent community, these players. I'm so thankful for these players. Just their buy into this thing. Some of these guys haven't had pads on since November of 2019, and they're coming down here, probably rusty as heck, and still getting out here and competing. I just love those guys. So
just thankful, grateful. Like you said, we need to get to Saturday and kick off. But hopefully we get through the week, and if we can reflect on it, it will be very rewarding. But let's get to Saturday first.
Yeah, and hopefully that means a more normal game in 2022. He is Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl. Be sure to check out the Senior Bowl on Saturday on NFL Network. Always appreciate you coming out, Jim.
Yeah, Albert, thanks for having me on. Thanks for supporting what we're doing and just all your great work, man. You kill it on so many levels. So appreciate you reaching out and asking me to do this.
I appreciate it. All right, thanks to Jim Nagy. Always great having him on, especially during this week. He's super busy, and we appreciate his time. We're going to jump right back into our DraftKings DFS Fantasy segment. And it's a little bit of a weird one, Fabs. We got Michael Fabiano from SI.com, the original author of the Stardom Sit'em column, in. Because there's no games this week, so we're going to have a little fun with it. And we are going to talk about how the picks went, but we're going to save our Super Bowl picks for next week. Our DFS, our fantasy picks, our Super Bowl picks are coming next week. But Fabs, I figured, like, you know, maybe we do a little bit of an exit interview here and then just tease something that you've been working on and I know you worked really hard on. The exit interview part of this is really going to be about a couple of teams that you always say like they're going to be back, and like it seems like that like rarely actually works out, right? Mm-hmm. But they do. But the two teams do look like they're fairly well positioned to be back in this spot again next year. Of course, the Packers have Aaron Rodgers, and they've won 13 games 2 years in a row. They've been in the NFC title game 2 years in a row, so it's not impossible to see them coming back. And the Bills are so young, and there's just, I mean, their best players still have potential to get better. So let's start there, Fabs. Like, you look at the two teams that were eliminated. What are some of the storylines that you're going to be watching from a fantasy perspective?
Well, we'll start off with Buffalo. And what do they do to improve their backfield from a fantasy perspective, right? Zach Moss was drafted this past season, didn't have an impressive rookie campaign, showed some flashes. Devin Singletary clearly is not going to be a featured back. Do the Bills go out there and try and get another runner who could potentially play a featured role, or do they continue to have a backfield committee? That would be certainly one of the questions I would think comes to mind for the Bills. But honestly, other than that, Albert, all of their wide receivers are under contract. Diggs, Beasley, John Brown, Gabriel Davis, obviously coming off a nice rookie campaign. So I don't know that you're going to see a lot of changes to the personnel there in Buffalo. And then, of course, Josh Allen's coming off of a QB1 campaign, and it'll be interesting to see if he can follow that up. In Green Bay, there was a question for about 2 seconds about whether or not Aaron Rodgers would come back, at least if you listen to his post-game press conference after the NFC Championship game. I didn't think he would ever leave. I don't think a lot of folks out there thought that that was going to happen. But, he talked about it on the Pat McAfee show that he'll be back. So what do the Packers do in free agency in the draft? Aaron Jones is a free agent. Do they pay him? Do they tag him? Do they let him go? For me, I'd love to see him go to Atlanta. And then you put A.J. Dillon in the starting role. And maybe you bring back Jamal Williams, and you got yourself a nice backfield situation. And A.J. Dillon becomes a potential breakout candidate from a fantasy perspective. What do the Packers do at wide receiver, if anything, to help Davante Adams, who is coming off of a spectacular season? They missed out last year on guys like Michael Pittman Jr. and T. Higgins and LaVisca Chenault when they drafted Jordan Love for some reason in the first round. Do the Packers go all in and give Rodgers even more weapons? That will be one of the more interesting storylines in Green Bay. Robert Tonyan's a restricted free agent. I would guess that they would bring him back after he scored 11 touchdowns this past season. So yeah, both teams with a good amount of fantasy value this past season, and that should continue into 2021.
And it's interesting too, Fabs. Like, I think I talked about this off the top of the show. It's just interesting, like, seeing Rodgers. I feel like what he's doing is exerting some pressure on the Packers, mm-hmm. and saying, like, I need more than I have right now. Yep. And look, I don't think he's blameless on what happened on Sunday. I think he could have tucked the ball and run it in.
Yes, absolutely.
On third down.
Absolutely.
It's not like he's blameless here, right? Like, I think that was a poor decision in a key spot. But I mean, like, I do think there's some element of just sort of looking around and seeing what the Chiefs have done for Mahomes and seeing mm-hmm. what the Bucs have done for Brady and seeing how Brady switched teams to make that happen. And I think there's a little bit of, all right, like, I'm going to exert a little bit of leverage here. I'm going to push a little bit. I'm going to see how I can make sure that my own situation is better by just force of my own will. And it'll be interesting to see the way that goes. No question. Just from a fantasy perspective and a football perspective in general, it's going to be really, really interesting to see where the next steps are for Rodgers and the Packers. Okay, so you work on a column. It's the, and I don't want to butcher the name, the 101 Fantasy Facts for 2021. Is that right?
For 2020. That's correct.
For 2020. Mm-hmm. Okay, so everybody should go to SI.com and check it out. Fabs puts a ton of work into it. So give the readers a couple of, like, the more interesting things that you dug up for this that'll make them want to go check it out.
And not only is this a fun look back at the season, but it also is going to give you some perspective heading into 2021 with some players. So I'll give you a couple of examples. Dak Prescott, who played 5 games this past season, had that gruesome injury against the Giants, right? Before he got hurt, he was on pace for 5,939 passing yards. And he was also on pace to score more fantasy points than any quarterback in a single season in the history of the National Football League. So a lot of folks might be concerned about Dak coming off of such an injury. If he's back to 100%, you can get him in the 6th or 7th round next season. That could be an absolute steal. Here's another one involving the Cowboys. This is nothing to do with the fact that I'm a Cowboys fan, but it's just interesting from a fantasy perspective, all right? In the games that Dak Prescott played this past season, which again was only 5, Ezekiel Elliott averaged over 22 points per game and was on pace to be the RB3, which is pretty darn good. In the 10 games that he played without Dak, Zeke averaged 11.2 points per game and was the RB24. So we saw an 11-point-per-game drop in his average with and without Dak. And Zeke's only 26 at the beginning of next season. Don't forget, this guy is still an elite running back, okay? And this is not me being a homer, but he's still worth a first-round pick without question, and he could end up being a top-5 running back in 2021. Another one, we'll move on to the wide receiver position and talk about CeeDee Lamb. Let's stick with the Cowboys. He finished as the wide receiver 22. He scored 217.7 fantasy points, which was actually 18th best among rookie wide receivers in the Super Bowl era. But he averaged 17 points a game with Dak Prescott under center. If you project 17.1 points per game over a full season, he finishes 0.6 of a point behind Justin Jefferson, who had one of the greatest rookie campaigns in the history of the National Football League among wide receivers. So keep that in mind. Tyler Lockett finishes the wide receiver 8. Pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. But let's look at the numbers. He had 53 points in 1 game against Arizona. That made up for 20% of his total points for the season. 42% of his fantasy points, Albert, came in 4 games. 4. And one of them was week 17, which didn't matter because most fantasy leagues are already all said and done. So those are a few of the stats that you'll find in this column. It'll be up on SI.com. Later today, if not tomorrow. And a lot of interesting stuff in there. I threw in a little historical stuff in there as well, but it will give you a look into deeper into the numbers. So, like, even though, for example, Zeke didn't have a great season overall, you got to break it down. When was Dak active? When was Dak out? Same kind of thing with Keenan Allen. He played most of the season with Justin Herbert, but when Justin Herbert was the quarterback and Allen played, his numbers were bananas good. Like, you know, elite number one wide receiver numbers. So just a few things that fantasy folks need to keep in mind as we look ahead to 2021 in a sport where there, you know, is no offseason.
All right. Now we're going to have some fun because I...
You're going to have fun. I'm not.
I think, yeah. So I'm not normally, like, very good at picking games. And, like, Fabs, honestly, people should listen to you for their fantasy advice because people come to me and, like, assume that I know what I'm doing, and I'm in a league with my college buddies and I finish, like, last every year. So I'm not normally great at picking games. Like, people come to me for gambling advice. I'm not mm-hmm. normally very good at fantasy, that people come to me for fantasy advice, even though this is what I do for a living, like, that I cover pro football for a living. However, I am on an incredible streak, Fabs.
Yep.
I caught you
right in the middle of it.
I believe I'm 11-1. I don't have the piece of paper in front of me. You're disputing that. I think you're claiming that I'm 10-2. We'll have to check. It's in my desk drawer. I'm in Mobile right now, so
yep.
It's in my desk drawer at home. But I do know that I clinched the picks challenge between me and Fabs.
That's right.
And we're not going to pick the Super Bowl this week. We'll pick the Super Bowl next week. But Fabs, mm-hmm. I think like we ought to give you a second chance here, right? Like,
I think what we do is, yeah, we go double or nothing.
Okay.
I'll let you pick. I'll let you pick your Super Bowl champion. I'll take the other team.
Okay. So that's what you guys have to look forward to next week. The original bet was over a case of beer. So
So now you get two. I'm going to get you nice and hammered.
Local beer,
if
right?
You win. Like,
and so so I'm going to get. I believe that the math there. I'm not great at math, but I believe that's 48 beers from Michael Fabiano. If he winds up losing this one. So stay tuned next week for that. And we will have some DFS and fantasy stuff for the Super Bowl too, right, Fabs?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. We'll have, I do rankings. There's not a lot of players to rank, but we certainly will do some DFS stuff as well.
Okay. He's Michael Fabiano, SI.com. Be sure to check out that 101 Fantasy Facts from 2020 column he's got up. Appreciate you, Fabs.
All right, my man. Have fun.
All right, thanks to Fabs. Thanks again to Jim Nagy. We're going to wrap the show up the same way we always do with the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, I give you a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart thing, and you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one this week comes from L. Oscaron. That's L. Oscaron 2020. This is a popular question, so I'm taking it from him, but a few other guys asked it. Where is Matthew Stafford going? L, I think it's a little too early to tell, but I do think it's possible this comes together relatively quickly, and I'll get to that in a second. I think the teams you have to watch with Matthew Stafford, the Denver Broncos, the San Francisco 49ers, the New England Patriots, and, of course, the Indianapolis Colts. I think those four are a good just jumping off point for what you should be looking for as far as suitors for Stafford. I also think that finding a way to move him now kind of sets up as a win-win-win. A win for the Lions, a win for the team trading for him, and a win for Stafford himself. For the Lions, I think getting in front of the quarterback market, if there is going to be this much movement, like protects you from having to confront the fact that maybe there's more supply than demand out there for quarterbacks, which could wind up working to bring Matthew Stafford's price tag down. If you make Stafford available right now and you work to get a deal done right now, I think you can get the best return because we don't know which other quarterbacks for sure are going to be available when we get to late February and early March. And so the way I look at it, like if they can find a way to move him now, I think it gives them the best chance to get the best return for Matthew Stafford. And it's not unprecedented. You guys may remember Alex Smith 3 years ago was moved during Super Bowl week. So a win for the Lions, a win for the other team, because now you can start building around Matthew Stafford and you have some certainty going in to February and March from a planning standpoint. It's enormous to have that piece of the puzzle done. And then for Stafford himself, I think it gives him peace of mind. He knows where he's going at that point. Also gives him a chance maybe to influence what his team, his new team might do to build around him. So I think that finding a way to maybe get this done in the next couple of weeks would actually greatly benefit everybody. I know it can't be pushed over the goal line until the middle of March, but I think finding a way to get a deal in place now would be like very, very beneficial to everyone involved. Question number two from Louie. That's at Louie_rock. Will there be normal OTAs and mini camps this spring? Louie, I would say the chances of that are very, very slim and probably ride on the vaccine and how quickly the vaccine gets to the general public. My wife's a nurse. She actually had her second shot the other day. So, you know, they're working through that part of it. And, you know, my understanding is when we get to February 1st, now there'll be another phase of people who get it. And maybe maybe the vaccine's to the general public when we get to March. Who knows when healthy 25-year-olds are going to be getting it, though. I still think the likelihood is that if we have anything in the spring, it'll be a truncated set of spring camps, and maybe there's some sort of like requirement that you were vaccinated to participate in those spring camps. I wouldn't rule anything out now. But I do think that those are very much in peril, and I don't think there's much of a chance that it'll be normal per se. There will have to be some sort of adjustment, I'd assume. Question number three from House of Woodcock. That's at Ambient Zombie Zero. Why have I not read any buzz about Sewell to Miami at three? Seems like the perfect way to help out our young QB, especially with a lot of depth at receiver in the draft. I wouldn't rule that out. I mean, they've got a bunch of good young linemen on that roster now. You had it at different points of the year, three rookies starting. Obviously, Austin Jackson, you take him in the first round. And so the chance to maybe have bookend tackles, maybe what you do with Robert Hunt then, who was, I believe, a second-round pick for them last year, you move him to right tackle inside maybe. And now all of a sudden you've got something with your offensive line, a bunch of young guys growing together. I just don't know that if you're Miami at three that you really want to stick there, because if Justin Fields and Zach Wilson catch fire, now all of a sudden maybe you can get some value for those picks. So I'll be honest, I'm not quite like if I'm Miami, it's either a quarterback and trade Tua or stick with Tua and trade three and try to get some more value for that pick rather than going all out to draft a Jamar Chase or a Penei Sewell or a Kyle Pitts or whoever it might be at three. I think you can still get a good player if you slide back a few picks. And maybe a team like the Lions at seven or Panthers at eight is willing to deal with you, and then you don't have to go back too far. Question number four, this is from Fish Whisperer at Chuck DFL. What's the shocker move in the top 10? Could some trades like Stafford, Watson, Darnold happen with those teams? I think like the pivot points in the top 10 right now are absolutely the second and third picks. Lots of questions about those. Do the Jets and Dolphins take quarterbacks? Do quarterbacks go in those spots? Could the Jets and Dolphins stick with their quarterbacks and trade those picks? Do the Jets and Dolphins stick there and pick position players? So I just think there's so much riding on those two AFC East teams sitting there with the second and third overall picks. So that piece of it's going to be interesting. And I think if, you know, some of these picks are available, one team I think I'd watch, I just kind of keep an eye on them for a potential move up, would be the Indianapolis Colts. They built their roster up to an insane degree. Like, I think it's a really, really good young roster. And like maybe it's better to just kind of go with, you know, a bird in the hand rather than two in the bush and take your swing at a Matthew Stafford or a veteran quarterback right now. But I mean, like, if you can go up and get a young quarterback to pair with the young roster that you have, and you have that young quarterback under cost control for the next 5 years, and that allows you to pay your Quentin Nelsons and your Darius Leonards without worrying so much about what the quarterback's making, could be a good situation for the Colts. So Colts would be one team I'd watch for. I think a major quarterback move is coming somewhere. I think it could be with a guy like Stafford. I think it could be with a move up the draft board. Question number five from Jeremy Fredericks. That's at Fredericks JK. It seems almost like half the league could be making changes at quarterback this offseason. What are some of the teams you think may come up short looking to upgrade? I think the teams that are an interesting spot are the ones that have quarterbacks that are making good money, that because of the amount of supply out there, might be a little hard to market those quarterbacks. And so who am I talking about? I'm talking about the Niners. I'm talking about the Rams. I'm talking about the Raiders. It's very easy to say you're looking for a upgrade at the position. Is the guy you have who's under contract marketable? Can you move that guy? Can you move Jimmy Garoppolo? Can you move Jared Goff? Can you move Derek Carr? Are there going to be spots for those guys and teams that are willing to pay them over $20 million per? Those deals have matured into bargains now. Like they, as far as what you're paying for your starting quarterback, those actually, with the exception of Goff, probably based on the cap numbers, like Garoppolo looks like a steal now. Derek Carr looks like very reasonable contract now. I'm not positive that those three teams would be able to move those three contracts. And if they can't, like, can you get out of them? So Garoppolo, the Niners can get out of that deal. Absolutely, the Raiders could get out of the Derek Carr deal if they wanted to just walk away, but then you don't get a return. Again, I think the Goff one's a little trickier. Question number six, this is from Mitch Biter, at Mitch Biter 91. Why is Aaron Rodgers' future all of a sudden in question? I don't think anyone can argue he's the problem. It's in question, Mitch, because he put it into question. He created the question. Do I think they want to trade him? No. Do I think what he did on Sunday was very intentional? Do I think that there was edge to what he said? Do I think that he knew exactly what he was doing? Yes, yes, and yes. Like, Aaron Rodgers knew exactly what he was doing when he put it out there that he could be somewhere else in 2021 and the future isn't certain. He knew exactly what he was doing. He's a very intelligent, self-aware guy. Like, that was not a mistake. And it's, you know, now it becomes a situation to watch, and it's because he made it a situation to watch. It'll be, again, very interesting to see where this one goes going forward, just from a relationship standpoint between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers organization, whether we're talking about Mark Murphy, the team president, Brian Gutekunst, the GM, the head coach, Matt LaFleur. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we want your feedback. We appreciate your feedback. Going into the offseason, we're going to need your feedback to kind of keep this thing rolling, and it looks like it's going to be a really exciting offseason. So you guys know where to find me. You can get me on my Twitter at Albert Breer, on my Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on my Instagram at Albert _ Breer. And what's even better than that is leaving us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps with the algorithms, helps get our podcast out there so more people can enjoy what we're doing right here on the pod. And I think you guys would be well served to listen to all the MMQB pods, the Weekside Pod with Jenny and Connor, the Monday Morning Pod with Gary and friends, and the Gambling Pod. Those are on the MMQB podcast feed. We're all in the same place. You guys can find us all on all the different services, the Weekside Pod, the MMQB Pod, the Albert Breer Show. We're on Spotify. We're on TuneIn. We're on Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. We are there. Same time next week, we will be in Tampa. See you guys then.